Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. lawmakers react to President Trump's wide-ranging address to Congress.
One thing Donald Trump did not mention last night was a real serious plan to bring down costs, the number one thing Americans wanted to hear most. Instead, Donald Trump doubled down on his plans to send costs skyrocketing by starting a trade war with Canada and Mexico.
Tariffs take a toll on small U.S. businesses. The UN again raises concern about humanitarian crisis in DRC and Sudan due to conflicts there. Much of Gabon's opposition supports General Oligui's bid for president. A South Sudan expert calls for de-escalation to mitigate rising tension amid arrests this week of political leaders.
That some members of the agreement are being arrested and detained does not really bode well for the peace agreement. It signifies lack of faith in the processes spelled out for decision-making and for conflict resolution in the spirit of the peace agreement.
And celebrating Ramadan in Morocco, those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In a wide-ranging speech, U.S. President Donald Trump laid out his vision for the key issues facing the country. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson spoke to lawmakers about Trump's plans for the economy, immigration, and U.S. foreign policy.
In his first address to Congress in his second term, President Donald Trump gave U.S. lawmakers a blueprint for the years ahead. Republican lawmakers praised that vision. Republican Representative Monica de la Cruz.
He's going to keep securing the border. He's going to make America prosperous again, secure again, and give us back the American dream that we lost under the Biden administration.
And said they appreciated Trump's fighting spirit. Republican Representative Doug LaMalfa.
The gloves are off, but it really is all about being the gloves off for America, because the optimism he brings and the policy lays out, they just make sense.
Some lawmakers said Trump did not address Americans' economic concerns. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
One thing Donald Trump did not mention last night was a real serious plan to bring down costs, the number one thing Americans wanted to hear most. Instead, Donald Trump doubled down on his plans to send costs skyrocketing by starting a trade war with Canada and Mexico.
One Republican in the House of Representatives told VOA that tariffs will restore America's economic strength. Republican Representative Mike Collins.
You'll bring American ingenuity, you'll bring those companies back to our shores, and you'll make the products cheaper because you'll be right here in the United States.
Republicans also told VOA their voters want Congress to renew the 2017 tax cuts. Again, Representative de la Cruz.
They're concerned about the Trump tax cuts going away. And so this will affect not only small business owners, which are largely Hispanic in my district, but it'll affect the everyday average American family. Their taxes are going to increase by over $1,200. And that is enough for 6 weeks of groceries for the average American family.
Hakeem Jeffries, the top House Democrat, criticized the budget cuts Republicans may need to pass those tax cuts.
Republicans aren't trying to bring the country together. They are tearing us apart. Republicans aren't trying to move America forward. They want to turn back the clock.
U.S. lawmakers are also closely monitoring the status of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship. Republicans said a letter from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky offering to reopen negotiations with the U.S. was the result of Trump's tough stance. Representative Ryan Zinke.
Obviously, the letter, he had rethought it and said, you know what? Maybe President Trump is the most important and the most powerful man in the world, and I'm not. And maybe we can't win a war without the United States.
But one House Democrat told VOA he is concerned about the state of the relationship. Representative Adam Gray.
I think we need to support Ukraine. They're a critical ally. We made commitments to Ukraine that we need to keep, and I believe in honoring America's word.
U.S. lawmakers' attention now turns to funding the U.S. government past a March 14th deadline. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. President Donald Trump this week finalized his plans to impose 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico and an additional 10% on China, bringing that country's total to 20%. To see how this affects some small businesses, VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti visited a family whiskey business nestled in the hills of Virginia.
It's mashing day at Catoctin Creek Distilling Company. The bubbling rye lends an aroma of baked bread.
Rye was the original. It was really where it started.
Becky and Scott Harris distill rye whiskey. Rye spirits were aged in Virginia more than 100 years before the country's first tariffs. Foreign tariffs, sealed into law by the nation's first president, George Washington. Now, tariffs under the country's current president,
25% on Canada and 25% on Mexico,
are upsetting this company's attempts to sell its rye whiskey abroad.
This makes exports a much harder lift, right? Because anybody buying my products then has to pay that tariff. And that's something that they won't do.
So not only is distribution in Mexico and Canada impacted, but also raw materials, like these glass bottles, even though they're made in America.
Big producers typically buy Mexican and Chinese glass, but after the U.S. presidential election, they switched to the American company.
We may actually run out of American glass in the next 2 months and have to order some imported glass at a higher price in order to keep product flowing.
The Harris's planned expansion to Mexico and Canada is crushed, with Canadian shop owners now removing their rye whiskey and other American-made liquor from store shelves.
We were in process of getting an order from France, and the French distributor told us that, no, it's just not a good time now for American products to go over there.
President Donald Trump says imposing tariffs will motivate world leaders to stop the flow of illegal immigrants and drugs.
But we need Mexico and Canada to do much more than they've done, and they have to stop the fentanyl and drugs pouring into the USA. They're going to stop it.
The president's supporters understand tariffs.
But the tariffs, I think, are necessary for leverage, okay? And to make things fair when it comes to us purchasing things from other countries purchasing things from us.
The stock market disagreed, tumbling two straight days on Wall Street. Desmond Lachman is with the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative group.
The hope has to be that the stock market's decline will cause the administration to dial back on this trade policy, because a trade war is really a lose-lose proposition.
But until then, Lachman says the cycle of tariffs and retaliatory tariffs will continue over and over again. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Purcellville, Virginia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 6th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. United Nations expert warned Wednesday that human rights defenders in conflict-torn Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo face a high risk of reprisals and serious abuses. The French news agency AFP says Mary Lawlor, the UN Special Rapporteur about human rights defenders, expressed her extreme concern over the situation facing activists in eastern DRC. Meanwhile, the United Nations says the conflicts there and in Sudan continue to create humanitarian crises. Stephane Dujarric is the spokesperson for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He briefed journalists on Wednesday in New York.
Our humanitarian colleague warned yet again that today armed violence and human rights violations continue to harm civilians and people who are fleeing their homes in the eastern parts of South Kivu, North Kivu, and Ituri. On Monday, our humanitarian partners in South Kivu reported that clashes between armed groups in Fizi territory, which is about 250 kilometers south of the provincial capital, Bukavu. Those clashes killed six civilians and wounded more than a dozen others. More than 300 people fled impacted villages in that area. We and our partners are continuing to do everything possible to provide life-saving assistance to civilians in need, especially those who face hostilities and other challenges. To that end, OCHA welcomes the European Union's recent announcement that they will deliver 44 tons of emergency relief, including medicine, nutrition supplies. This urgently needed assistance will help boost the response in both North Kivu and South Kivu. And in Chad, the International Organization for Migration and the International Humanitarian Partnership completed this week the expansion of a humanitarian hub located in Farshana, which is in eastern Chad, not far from the Adre crossing, which you know is a major crossing point for humanitarian assistance. IOM says this will enable as many as 220,000 more people impacted by the crisis in Sudan to receive help. The expanded operation and accommodation capacity of the hub will strengthen cross-border interagency humanitarian operations for Sudan. IOM said the expansion comes at a critical time as the humanitarian crisis continues to worsen, with the urgent need for food, shelter, healthcare, and protection at an all-time high. And in the Central African Republic, the peacekeeping mission there and our human rights colleagues issued today a report which documents violations taking place in the country. The report says that in two waves of attacks in October last year and January of this year, armed group, including one affiliated with the country's armed forces, committed grave human rights violations, mainly against Muslim communities, Sudanese refugees, and other asylum seekers. These attacks took place in the southeastern part of the country. At least 24 people were killed, some of them victims of summary execution, according to the report.
That's Staffan Dujarric, the spokesperson for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, speaking Wednesday in New York. Tensions are rising in South Sudan's capital, Juba, following the arrest of senior military and political leaders of the opposition group, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, and Army in Opposition, also known as the SPLM-AIO. The government has confirmed the arrest. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Juba.
Al Mai Deng, the SPLM-IO spokesperson, says government security forces arrested Petroleum Minister Port Kang Chol, a senior SPLM-IO official, at midnight on Tuesday at his residence in Thongping, Juba. Mai also confirmed that General Gabriel Duop Lam, a top SPLA-IO military commander, was arrested earlier.
The deputy chief of defense force and acting general chief of the staff of SPLA-IO has been arrested. He was arrested yesterday without arrest warrant, and the reason for his arrest is not known. And then yesterday midnight, Honorable Port Kang, Minister of Petroleum, was also forcefully taken out of his home and has been arrested. We do not know the reasons why he was arrested. And then yesterday night, the resident of the first vice president was also besieged, which was also another development. We do not also know why this was happening.
Mai warns that this arrest threatened the 2018 revitalized peace agreement and could derail its implementation. In addition, government troops have surrounded the home of first vice president Riek Machar, who is a leader of the SPLM-AIO.
And now that the violation has taken this direction, we very much are concerned that the whole agreement is at risk. And that will likely slide the country back into a situation many of us do not seek.
At a press conference Wednesday afternoon, Michael Makwe-Ilweth, the National Minister of Information, confirmed the arrest but gave no specifics.
They were arrested because they are in conflict with the law. There is no joke about that. Because what we need is security. And as such, If anybody is arrested, you must have been arrested because of a reason.
When asked about troop deployments around the residence of First Vice President Riek Machar, Makwei said it was to calm tensions and ensure security in Juba. A deadly clash between the South Sudan People's Defense Force and the White Army militia on Monday reportedly resulted in multiple deaths and injuries in Nasir County. Makwei urged SPLM-AIO leaders to restrain the White Army, which he claimed is affiliated with the opposition.
The Artigono calls upon the partner member, that is the partner member of the Artigono, who is the SPLM-AIO, to control and restrain its forces and respect and abide by the resolutions of the 3rd of March 2025. And as you have known here, the SPLM-AIO is whom? To the White Army. You might have come across a video where they have, of course, shouting the slogans of the IO, which proves that the so-called White Army is not actually a White Army, but an IO force that attacked Nasir and captured it.
SPLM-AIO has denied involvement in Nasir clashes, instead calling on the government to deploy the necessary unified forces, who they say civilians trust more than SSPDF. However, Makwei said that unified forces cannot be deployed because they lack weapons due to the arms embargo on South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Juba.
A South Sudan expert says the arrest this week of individuals affiliated with the country's revitalized peace agreement signifies a lack of confidence in the process. Brian Adeba is a senior policy advisor at Century, an organization that seeks to disable multinational predatory networks benefiting from violent conflicts. He tells me that both sides should pursue de-escalation to mitigate the rising tension.
Well, I think the peace process outlines a collegial decision-making on aspects of controversy between the parties that have signed it. That some members of the agreement are being arrested and detained does not really bode well for the peace agreement. It signifies lack of faith in the processes spelled out for decision-making and for conflict resolution in the spirit of the peace agreement.
The arrests, at least some of those arrests, are associated with the first vice president, Riek Machar. I'm thinking back to what happened when the civil war came between supporters of Kiir and Riek Machar.
I think it exacerbates the tensions between supporters of both parties, and it deserves significant attention from the guarantors of the peace agreement. And also, it calls for a de-escalation of hostilities, because right now what is happening, the backdrop to this is the overrunning of the base that houses SPDF, the Sudan South Sudanese Army contingent in the town of...
SSPDF, eh?
Yeah, SSPDF, which is, you know, in the town of Nasir, which is in the Nuer community territory from which Riek Machar hails. And so de-escalation is something that should be pursued diligently to mitigate tensions. I think involving elders and respected members of the community would go a long way to bring down the tensions.
Brian, last week, I think the representative of the United Nations in South Sudan warned the officials there about the need to focus on the road to elections. Do you think this could be another roadblock?
I think this is not related to the election preparations. I think the elections are still a long way off, not very long way off. I would say it's a year off. There are processes that are required to create the mechanisms and the institutions to govern the elections. Those are still ongoing or behind schedule considerably. But what we have, this tension that is flaring up, is a result of the subnational violence that predominates across several areas in the country. So this is not an issue that is peculiar to Nasir alone. It has happened in Western Equatoria State. It has happened in Tonj. It's happening in many other jurisdictions. And the United Nations itself has warned severally that there is need to put in place mechanisms to contain this subnational violence, because this violence undermines the spirit of the peace agreement.
Brian Adeba is a senior policy advisor at the Sanctuary, an organization that seeks to disable multinational predatory networks benefiting from violent conflict. He was speaking to us from Ontario, Canada. In Gabon, it appears military leader General Brice Oligui Nguema's decision to seek the presidency may have the support of the nearly all opposition parties. This, after another leading opposition member, Terence Nambu Musona of the Citizen Awakening Party, declared his support for General Oligui. Gabon will hold presidential elections on April 12 to end military rule, which began with a coup on April 30, 2023. Alexander Paga is the spokesperson for Nambu Musana. She tells me that Musana believed General Oligui will be able to carry out the reforms that he promised.
The candidacy of the president of the transition, the General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema, is not a surprise for us, as the action taken by the latter, launch of infrastructures project, economic and social reforms, Republican tours throughout the country went very well beyond the sole restoration of the institutional initially outlined by the CTRI.
What are the other opposition political parties saying about this decision?
Most of them, all of them, let's say, of the leaders of Alternance 23 platform, former opposition under Ali Bongo, have agreed to take part in the transition and to support, meaning participation in the government and within the various institutions. They decided to support the president of the transition in his desire to restore the institution and to engage Gabon in new era. They are therefore naturally in accompaniment, in support of the president in his desire to remain in power beyond the transition, to continue the reform work undertaken. A new circumstantial opposition is emerging with former leaders of the fallen regime whose unbelievable approach cannot prosper, unfortunately, as the catastrophic situation of the country is attributed to them.
General Oligui Nguema says the Gabonese people appealed to him to run for president, and he is only accepting their appeal.
This is not a new phenomenon in Gabon. When the society wants a political leader to take part in electoral contest, it has been happening long before today. And the President Oligui is taking advantage of the same phenomenon, which results in a case from a country now on the move with reforms and many projects that he has launched and that the population want him to complete. It was therefore natural that he responded favorably, especially since a good number of political leaders also want him to continue his action.
Will your party participate in the April 12 election? And do you think you have enough time to prepare?
The president of the PRC, Terence Nyembu Mutsuna, former vice president of Alternance 2023, has since the beginning of the transition given his support to President Oligui Nguema. He reiterates his support for the president by not being a candidate in the presidential election of April 12, 2025, believing that the latter is able to carry out the reform defended by the Citizens' Awakening Party for a reconciled, repaired, and restored Gabon.
Alexandra Paga is the spokesperson for Terence Nambu Musana of the Citizen Awakening Party. She was speaking with me from the Gabonese capital, Libreville. A Tunisian court has opened a high-profile trial in which 40 people stand accused of conspiring against state security. The accused include leading opposition politicians, former diplomats, business leaders, and lawyers, according to the Associated Press. Activists protested outside the courthouse, calling it a baseless and politically driven case. And that's it for this Thursday, March 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botte in Washington saying, have a lovely day.